Peter's going to introduce the next session.
No, don't worry. I wanted to read.
We've got half an hour.
Okay, this was mainly just to see if you had any other points you wanted to raise at this stage. So, who's got other comments that we haven't already covered so far?
Francois, you go.
Well, I think Veronica has already. So prudence has been mentioned by Liz earlier on. We had a discussion at the Accounting Standard Advisory Forum end of September. So there is a need from our perspective to rediscuss prudence in the qualitative characteristics of chapter of the conceptual framework with various benefits. Basically what was very clear in the forum the other day, which was very interesting to see, is that for some it's just not necessary because it's there. So it doesn't harm to make it explicit. And the thing that was also good in the discussion is that I think around the table everybody had a similar understanding of what prudence is in relation to accounting. So, and it's not something that, anyway, it's summarized in the summary that's going to be published soon. So that's one thing. The other thing is also a mention that Veronica made just before the break is that we would like reliability to find its way back into the framework as the qualitative characteristic, with two issues more particularly. One, in fact, that you should not exclude, you should not limit verifiability to being an enhancing characteristic. Verifiability is a part of reliability. And also questioning whether, it's a question, whether you really can have reliability when you have reliability thanks to disclosures. And in relation, in fact, to the way you articulate the recognition criterion is certainly something to consider. Then, indeed, there is the objective of stewardship. I mean, we've issued a bulletin together with the standard setters in Europe that we have titled accountability in an attempt, in fact, to deal with this notion of the word stewardship, which is a difficult concept. I don't know whether that was... Anyway, we have come to at the stage of the bulletin to identify, in fact, three different views in Europe right now. I think everybody agrees that stewardship has to be discussed and taken into account. The question is whether it should have primacy, whether decision usefulness should have primacy, or whether they should compete at an equivalent level, and so that you get into an issue of trade-off. But it cannot be that it's subsumed in decision usefulness per se. So it needs to be articulated as an objective per se. And then... I think these are the three most important issues I would like to mention at this stage. There are others. We're working also on the issue of complexity because we know that some opposition, when some opposition to IFRS develops, it develops partly on the idea that it's been going too complex. People don't understand the financial statements. They develop non-GAAP and what have you. So it's also an aspect that we are considering, and it may well be that cost benefit is not necessarily a cost constraint, but you could also have as an objective of having a relevant, the most efficient relevant financial reporting in a way.
Just on prudence, I mean, we've heard a lot of discussion on it, but we are in a little bit of a difficult position given to us by the European parliamentarians at the moment, who, some of whom are suggesting that our funding should be tied to the reintroduction of prudence into the framework. Which does that mean if we did reintroduce, are we bending to them and doing away with our independence? I mean, just how we handle that, it's going to be quite... They've sort of backed us into a corner, really.
Are they retracting that slightly, though? I think the amendments have come through. I'm not sure. I haven't seen the latest compromise.
I'm not sure either.
But I thought there was some.
They're getting into the trialogue.
So it's not a decision of the European Union. I understand that. But it's just the threat is... You know, conditional funding has made it difficult. We're going to have to handle it carefully. Any other points?
I mean, I would just reiterate what Françoise said from the sort of user's perspective. I also question, you know, the purpose of financial reporting, whether or not it really does provide decision useful information, because to me the accounts are largely a confirmatory document to the market as to what management has done to the resources entrusted to it, and that's the use that the equity owners, the investors, rely on those financial statements for. So I would really like to see more prominence given to stewardship and accountability, because I think that's the real benefit of financial statements. And we would welcome prudence being reintroduced or an element of caution. I just think it's strange that it was taken out in 2010, and yet ever since then, with putting leases on the balance sheet, moving from an incurred to an expected loss model, there's been more prudence sort of imported. And I think given the voice of users, some of which have been quite prominent in pushing the Commission on these issues, it would have been helpful to have addressed that. And I think we'd also like to see reliability reintroduced as a qualitative characteristic.
Okay. We're on.
I think it's obvious what I was going to say. I was probably going to quite clearly agree on the stewardship and reliability, my point earlier. I think reliability is a very good word. Verifiability is not something you hear accountants talk about. You don't hear anyone talk about verifiability. You try and get your tongue around it. Yet everyone talks about reliability every time we talk about the financial information, whether we talk about audits, whether we talk about governance, we talk about reliable. And I think that's extremely important, because that just demonstrates how we're applying these concepts in practice. So why deny what is happening there and how you yourself are using it in the debate? So I think it's a very important word and needs appropriate prominence as a concept. On stewardship and accountability, the number of times, however many of you have said it's there, we just use the words differently. We don't use the concept stewardship, but it's fully embedded in what we do. And I think it's fully embedded in every corporate governance framework in every jurisdiction, wherever you go, whether that's in the US, whether that is everywhere else. Accountability is extremely well-established concept, and therefore shouldn't be difficult. Now, prudence is a little trickier, because prudence has got various negative connotations, and a lot of people would say prudence means bias, and a number of people have said prudence means bias. I don't view prudence as bias. I view prudence as an appropriate exercise of caution when making decisions. That's not bias. This is... I think something I do as an accountant, as an auditor all the time. I think it reconciles beautifully with neutrality. I don't think they contradict. I'll just say the words contingent asset for you versus contingent liability, and I think that just resolves the concept of prudence there and then. But because it has got that negative connotation, I think it is very difficult to go and just simply say, I will reintroduce prudence in that word. So if you do go that way, I think you do need to define what you mean by prudence. And something around the exercise of degree of caution, appropriate recognition criteria, exercising it when measuring, I think all of it kind of fits together and I think is needed. And I think that's what we already do in practice and that's what we already have in the standards that you write and are writing at the moment. But it's the question really of formulating and describing it appropriately. But I do see a bit of a problem in simply saying, well, I will introduce prudence, not just for the political reasons in your citing, but for the fact that a lot of people would put that negative bias connotation against that word. And I think you need to address that. And if you are bringing it in, define it. Define it.
Leah?
Thanks, Ian. I was going to make a comment not so much on the content of the discussion paper, but more like the how this discussion paper fits in the rest of the standard. Particularly, some of the concepts in here are, different from what's currently in a standard or elsewhere. And given the, there's not a hierarchy, but there's a reference to the framework in IAS 1 and IAS 8. What I'd like to see is that there's at least some guidance on what people need to do with it, because on the one hand it says this is mainly designed for the board to make certain decisions on at standard level, but at the same time it does recognize that constituents will be looking at this when applying IFRS. On, for example, let's take a definition of an asset. If you expand that and you say you recognize unless, that has immediate effect on the application in practice. And I was, if that's intended, then okay, fine. But if that wasn't intended, I think you need to think about how if you approve the discussion, for the framework, where there's consequential amendments to standards in order to avoid any unintended consequences.
Well, I think there's a couple of things on that. This was also raised this morning. It's quite a legitimate point. I mean, first of all, in the hierarchy, the standards come first. So if it's in the standard and it contradicts the framework, well, then you follow the standard. We've said that this is, I think in the discussion paper, primarily for the board, but acknowledge exactly what you've said about IS1, IS8, and practice. But we've also said that I think that we don't have a current intention, once the framework's finished, to suddenly sweep through all the standards and make consequential amendments. I mean, already we have standards that don't comply with our existing framework, and we manage to live with that. But we have said that, I mean, this is again in the discussion paper, that were we to bring in a standard that doesn't comply with the framework, we should say so. And we should say why. And then leave it at that. The other part of this is the agenda consultation. So I think you said 2015, 2014. Sometimes 2015, I think, soon we've got another. We have them every 3 years, and 3 years roll by quicker than you think. and so revising standards would have to go through the agenda consultation process. I mean, if everybody told us they loved our new framework and we should get stuck in and revise all our standards, then we'd have to listen to what people say. But, you know, we don't automatically put things onto our agenda and just do them.
The one thing that Ian, as well, it'd be helpful in comment letters if you can give us some examples where you're worried about the implications of the framework, where you think there's a gap in the standard, because we actually have heard it twice today, and they're saying there are examples. I can't think of any of them at the moment, but there are, and I'm sure there are potentially some, but most of our standards got pretty good coverage. It covers intangibles, it covers probably plant and equipment, and, you know, all the financial instruments and so on. So we would have to identify a clear item where we would have to be worried that finalising the framework would actually lead us to a bit of an issue. So it's very helpful.
The contradiction you really need to worry about. Yeah. If you go around consulting, for example, example, arguments with economic compulsion, it automatically raises questions on financial instruments. And so it's what Ian was saying a minute ago, it's very important to highlight where you're knowingly changing approach and that there is a problem with the standard, because otherwise you will hit application straight away, application issues, but it's the gap areas. It's, do you analogize to the standard? Do you analogize to the framework? If the two say different things, where'd you go?
Okay. Andrew.
Can I just go back on the reliability point, which two or three people have raised? If we were to put something back in, what would it actually be? Would it be reliability as it was in the previous framework? Would it be reliability the way people used it in most of their comment letters, which was actually something pretty close to verifiability most of the time? What exactly would we do? And what would we do with the other things that are in faithful representation at the moment? Would they be subsumed within reliability, which is sort of roughly what it was in the old framework, or would they live on in some other way? Would they be scrapped? How would you see that working?
On the basis of, certainly mentioned the word reliability. Yeah. I would say, to me, it's a primary characteristic of information. It's primary qualitative characteristic of information to be included in order to achieve faithful presentation. So it's the way it used to be, the trade-off between the relevance and the reliability worked really well, and that's how people still talk about it when they apply. So where does that fit in? You decide. Not particularly bothered, but I think it is a really important qualitative characteristic not to be subsumed somewhere within. But prudence may fit within reliability.
But for example, the way reliability was discussed in the old framework, one part of it was substance over form.
Yes.
But I don't think most people, when they wrote reliability in their comment letters, were remotely thinking of substance over form.
But it's quite interesting, you see, Peter, you raise that, but funnily enough, with the substantive, right, substantive transactions, that's what we talk about when we apply the standards all the time. And the number of practitioners around the table will verify that is the first thing we would always look, what is a substantive right, and what is, we look at the substance of the transaction before we do anything else. And so if you were looking to actually find something that is missing as the biggest concept, you know, that would be the one, the substance, it comes in as part of your...
It's a verifiable statement she's made.
Yeah, exactly.
Andrew.
Thanks, Ian. I just wanted to take the opportunity to say that I think it's a great thing that the ISB is revisiting its conceptual framework, and I think we ought to be appreciative of the response to their agenda consultation which led to this, and that the work is extremely welcome. I also think the discussion paper is an enormous achievement to have been produced in the time that it has, and I think that the ISB and its staff team have really done a super job on it. I think the disappointment that you're hearing from some quarters with some sections is isolated and is understandable in the context of what could be produced within that time frame. But it does fall short of what some of us believe a conceptual framework should really do. And if we're to stick with the timetable of 2015, one just wonders how much progress can be made in that time. Now, the obvious bit of advice to give to people is let's slow down and let's get a bit more realistic about it. However, there is another way of going about it, which is to say, all right, let's take this forward with the aim of putting something out in 2015, but let's not signal that that's the end of the road, that there will be subjects that require further exploration, further research. I can see the downsides of that approach. I can see the downside of every approach, I think, or at least I would say that all approaches have their downsides. But I just... hugely appreciative of what you've done, and I don't want to dilute that message in any way, but I would like to think about how we can get to the kind of aspirational framework that really will drive the improvements in financial reporting standards.
Yeah. Now, I can see your point there, Andrew, and I mean, we have set about doing, of getting something completed in what we call a timely manner, so other people might call it a hasty manner. But, and I think it should be regarded as a living document, and I think their very personal opinion, not at all that I'm aware of the opinion of the board at the moment, but that there are areas of it that will clearly need further development, and we shouldn't be ashamed of that. I mean, measurement's one that comes to mind. We get something out of measurement that there's just so much work to be done there. And, disclosures, which we're working on concurrently, presentation, you know, there's lots of, whether that's done at a standard level or a conceptual level is another point, but there is, I think, we shouldn't say that that's it and it's set in stone and we're not going to do any more. But we would like to get something out in 2015. Osman.
I just wanted to say maybe just a few words on comparability. The kind of analysts that are at S&P, I think, struggle a lot with trying to make meaningful comparisons across peer companies in different countries or even within the same country. And one of the things that we looked at when we were responding to the FASB disclosure framework was went back to the financial statement presentation project, which talked about disclosures in the form of roll forwards and what should be the components of those roll forwards. And, you know, I don't know whether it belongs in a conceptual framework or not, but comparability, I think, is a constant theme that I hear back from the analysts when I tell them what I'm doing and what I'm trying to represent their views, is that some kind of more consistent format of presentation of disclosures would be extremely, extremely helpful. And I think that there's an appreciation that they don't want templates because that can never reflect the individual circumstance of each company, but there are lots of areas where they feel that actually some kind of more tabular presentation in a consistent way would be very, very helpful. And on a related point, I think comparability and work that you're doing as a board on disclosures, there's a slight concern that the focus seems to be on reducing volume rather than kind of increasing quality. It would be nice to have less volume, but I don't think that's a priority for the analysts that I speak to.
Complexity, is that a priority for you? Well, it's slightly different from volume. You know, complexity does have a bit of both, but I mean, it may be that that's not as important to you either. But
I think it can be handled if we can understand how one bank's or corporate's position compares to one that we would like to compare it to. And sometimes we just can't do that in a consistent way. So we can do it at, you know, top line. We can compare something very simple like revenues or capital. But trying to break down into components, it gets a lot more difficult and a lot less meaningful, I think.
All right. We're coming to the home straight. Any other points people would like to make? No?
Just to reiterate, well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you all very much. I mean, I think this has been a very good, very constructive, very helpful conversation. As we said at the beginning, we're early in the process.